Alrighty, we are back with another episode of the Broker Banter podcast, episode 7. We're in London and we are smashing out so many business reviews. We're adding so much value. It's crazy. And a lot of these reviews are coming from the BooPass platform, which is who sponsored this video. Roll the tape. Thanks, guys. Now we're going to talk about our episode sponsor, BooPass. So let's get into what BooPass does. So BooPass is an online business marketplace. If you are looking to buy an online business, take a look at BooPass. They have some great businesses listed. And on top of that, I actually quite like the analysis that they do on each listing. It makes it very easy to get through a lot of listings. As you can imagine, there are a lot of marketplaces out there. There are a lot of businesses for sale out there. But BooPass makes it easy to actually quickly analyze and see if I like this business or not. Another thing that BooPass does is on some of these listings, they actually provide some financing on some of these listings. So if you're interested in those finance deals or even the deals that don't have financing or just interested in BooPass in general, take a look at their marketplace and let's get back to the podcast. And we're back. We're going to jump into some news about the e-com world and then do some business reviews like we always do. What I found is this article from Modern Retail, which I think is a great place. That's where that article... Yeah.
Shout out to Modern Retail.
Yeah.
Great publisher.
We should do a guest post. If you want to sponsor a podcast, just saying, we're open to it. This was one article I found. Amazon's reported Temu-like discount store likened to slap in the face by sellers.
Well, that makes sense. Like, even without reading this, so yeah. Temu, for anyone who hasn't shopped on Temu, they're going as a platform directly to Chinese, predominantly, factories.
Mm.
So I think Shein was doing the same thing with fashion or apparel. So Tim was doing it for literally anything. Like, I know that my friends who are getting married, I'm 31, George, so all of my friends are getting married. I know you're a little younger.
I'm Greek. My friends are getting married already. 25 and 24.
So like, instead of buying or renting the crazy expensive tat that wedding venues try to sell to you when you're booking your wedding, my friends who are getting married are going onto Temu, and instead of renting all the lights and all the crazy that the venues want to rent to you, they are just buying it on Temu.
Just this, the wedding package.
Yeah, totally. So they buy $17. Buy all these streamers and all the different stuff. So Temu, they're going directly to the factories. So now, historically, we've begun to see that, I mean, Amazon brands are literally intermediaries between overseas factories and getting them to consumers. So a brand goes and finds a supplier in Alibaba or wherever, and they create a listing, maybe create a brand, they put together all the brand assets and everything around it. But they're genuinely playing arbitrage between, okay, I purchase for this price, I bring in bulk inventory, I keep it in the Amazon warehouse, someone purchases it, it ships out, I collect the revenue minus Amazon's fees. Temu is a Chinese-based company, and they're just going directly to all of the factories. They've also raised hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. Yeah. And my understanding is a lot of the shipping costs and even some of the product costs are being subsidized by the same way that Uber was really cheap right when it was starting, because your rides were actually being subsidized by
investment. Yeah,
so that they got customer acquisition. So Temu is doing the same thing. So that's why you're able to get such cheap product on Temu. They've cut out the intermediary. There's no more brand owner that needs to be compensated, because Temu is just the platform going direct, and then they're aggregating all of the shipment, all the onesie twosie orders, even though it's a bunch of stuff worth $3 here, $12 here.
From Temu.
They're crazy aggressive.
But it's the most insane products.
Oh yeah,
and they're like a dime. That's not
profitable. Well, and it's not profitable. That's on the first purchases, you're getting they're just showing crazy things to try to get you to make a first purchase. And those first orders are always being subsidized by investors, so that they're drawing you in. You're pulling it up. They've got their shop like a billionaire, which I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know a ton of billionaires, but the ones that I do know don't buy a bunch of random shit on Amazon.
Like, some of the shit they sell.
These massive AirBuds.
What the?
For
just the insane sneakers. Stuff.
No, it is
crazy. But look, if that's what Amazon is bringing, like, I believe that's what this article is about.
So, but I think what this article is likely going to be getting into is saying that Amazon's just going to be doing the exact same thing. They're going to launch, they're going to go directly to factories and get them to post products.
Yeah.
The next innovation is by shipping directly out of China and using what's called e-packet services, you can get around duties. Yeah. So there's a bunch of ways to get around this. You can import products if you're shipping into the US. If it's small shipments, they can first come into Mexico as like this big bulk shipment and then be depalletized and individualized and have the USPS labels or whoever's doing the mile-in delivery, the labels already on the packages. And then they go across the border. And because of whatever NAFTA is now called, the new North America Free Trade Agreement, anything under a certain total value threshold isn't subject to duties. So you can
$80 or something? Is it, what's the?
I think it's 80 maybe from, that sounds potentially right, from Mexico. I think the Canadian US one is 200. So the threshold is pretty high. So I know that this is when you hear anyone talking about like the Universal Postal Union stuff that's going on in American politics right now. That's actually the loophole that would likely be getting addressed, is there's all of these small, cheap products coming in from China.
Yeah.
The problem, though, of course, is if you start, not to turn this isn't a political podcast, but obviously the people who are predominantly shopping on Temu are more low-income households. So actually, if you shut down this loophole, it's going to be increasing the price of products from Shein, Temu, etc. AliExpress is the one that's been in this game for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's actually low-income households that will be disproportionately paying more for the products that they've become accustomed to sourcing through those apps. So it's interesting. It's potentially a way for, if we crack down on it, that's a way for governments to make more money. But
yeah. And Amazon apparently is
a sticky problem.
That's what Amazon plans to launch an online store.
They've got their own. They've got their own warehouses. They've got their own chartered flights. They have all of the infrastructure that they need to build their own Temu. So it makes sense.
To buy brand owners, basically. Like,
oh, it's cutting out all of that. Yeah.
The Amazon fees have come up, and now they're going to do their own.
And you have to pay for ads to get distribution.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, a lot of people have moved from Amazon to Shopify for these reasons.
Yeah, or diversified. Like, keep your Amazon store, build your Shopify store. But even now, like, getting the attention and then the traffic has gotten really expensive, which brings us back to maybe two episodes ago, we were talking about creator partnerships. And that I think that's where the new underpriced attention is going to be. And just generally, if you're able to drive traffic to something without paying a ton. I know one thing we were talking about off camera, but I'll bring it on now, is the idea that there's all this legacy intellectual property that's going to, I think, still has a lot of interest in it. So I'd use like I live in London now, so I'll use like an old BBC show that I think has a lot of appeal across, you know, across many English speaking countries, is like Blackadder. Do you remember Blackadder? Of course, with Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean. So if you go online right now, like, there's not really a meaningful collection of legitimate Blackadder merchandise. I don't believe that there's like a Blackadder merch store. I'm not certain that there's a Blackadder social channel. Like, that's intellectual property that's being held by goodness knows who. BBC probably has some stake in it, but it's quite beloved. Like, people talk about Blackadder all the time. There's memes of it. Like, it is a recognizable piece of intellectual property that's being wildly undermined. That
can have another life. Totally. Like, how many times Seinfeld has been bought and sold and bought and sold so many times in reruns. And like, I know people who work for me who weren't even born in, like, were born in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Who've never fucking heard of Seinfeld. They're getting my Seinfeld references. I'm like, guy, I wasn't born when Seinfeld was happening, but my mum would see reruns. And now you're seeing reruns of reruns of reruns.
Yeah.
And you're getting it. Like, the content has like second and third and fourth lives. And that's, then when young people are watching it, then they're making their own memes and content. Like,
totally.
They would check into that sort of e-commerce merchandise and stuff.
So I think it's going to be, I'm really, really bullish on that space, like legacy intellectual property remonetization, getting them up on YouTube Shorts, Instagram. Yeah. And I think it'll be regionalized too. So you're an Aussie Greek, like, there's got to be stuff that is that you know about, that like Greece, like it's a kids show that like only Greek people know about, or like something that's huge mostly in Australia and New Zealand that like no North American hustler is going to be thinking about, but you'd have line of sight to like, oh my God, no one's doing anything with this like Australian intellectual property from the 1980s that people still love only in Australia. That is it going to be a multi-billion-dollar a year business? Absolutely not. Could you make a really interesting couple million, millions of dollars a year in revenue? Very profitable because there's so much organic reach to it. I'm honestly really excited about this. But I think that that's a great alternative to all of these creator brands that we're now seeing. And creator collaboration, social shopping, like just going after Pontiac, another great example. Like beloved car company, no longer exists as a car manufacturer, but tons of people interested, great memories.
It's been crazy pivots in history too. Like I always look at the history of like Michelin. Like Michelin is, everyone thinks Michelin, they think the Michelin guide, Michelin stars. Then I'm like, I always love telling people, like, you know, they sell fucking tires.
Tire company.
You know, they're like, that's not the same company. I'm like, it definitely is.
It is.
And it's like, that was one marketing tactic, but now it's two separate, very separate entities. But
But I think it's still genuinely, like, I've been to a couple nicer Michelin. Like, they are out of the way. Now, a lot of it's accessible by trains, but I understand. Like, you gotta.
There's been crazy pivots in history, and I don't think it's. And look, it's, I think whether it's AI, whether it's this or that, just saturation and maturity of the market, even just general capitalism, general globalization, general entrepreneurship, everything is just, it's getting harder and harder to be different, harder and harder to have, you know, carve out your own part of the business world, especially as it relates to multi-trillion dollar entities like Amazon.
Totally.
Carving out, like, and even on that note, it was kind of like, of course, I'm going to bring up history in this note, but like Amazon is worth how much right now? Like Amazon market cap is...
It's 1.7 trillion today.
1.7 trillion. Okay. So like so Amazon is carving out, getting rid of small entrepreneurs who have Amazon storefronts, who are doing the groundwork.
Like then they're just going directly to the...
So they're their own multi-trillion dollar company.
Yeah.
Just connecting east to west.
Yep.
That just reminds me of the VOC.
Yep.
The Dutch East India Trading Company, because it's like multi-trillion dollar private organization that is just has massive infrastructure, minus probably the very bad things that the VOC did.
Yeah.
But like just being a multi-trillion dollar entity going from being the only thing that is between the east and the west.
Yeah.
I'm like, and like really what we're thinking about is like, whatever, the VOC and the British East India Trading Company, all these massive corporations stopped in the early 19th century, the 20th century, when the governments took them over, and then that was their empires, and then capitalism was, it was all small merchants and all small business owners. And now slowly, because of inequality or monopolization, it's, we're going back to that. It feels like almost with these big moves from like Amazon.
But now we've created the attention economy. And that's what we've been talking about a lot today is just like now the big opportunity, I think, for individuals is creating attention, because that's what's going to be, that's what's going to be deciding what products are being purchased.
In the first place,
the people who are providing those products, the landscape on that is definitely shifting towards bigger and bigger businesses. And especially in a post D2C VC environment, as it relates specifically to e-commerce, we're going to be seeing fewer people investing into this space because it doesn't have consumer SaaS multiples.
And really, I don't know, it feels like those people who can grab that attention, make the content, are people who can monetize or have the ability to spend the money on setting up a studio, animation, and getting to the point where they're grabbing attention so that it can be monetized. It just, and that's obviously what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
But like, it's people who are willing to make that jump and willing to iterate and learn that process. Because once you're making enough videos in enough different series, enough different platforms, and it's monetized, then the sky's the limit.
Right.
You just keep doing that, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
But like, and with whatever products, your products, someone else's products, but it's just making that first jump in investment, I guess.
We really, like, that was a crazy spider web.
Yeah.
where we started and where we got to. That's awesome.
Cool.
Anyway, so it makes sense. All that to say, it makes sense that Amazon wants to slowly mimic,
push out everyone else.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're going to jump into our first few listings to review. The first listing we're looking at, I'm just going to start screen recording so y'all can see it as well, is a quiet light listing. So let's crack into this. So it's a 10-year-old passive recipe site. There's a small place in my heart for recipe sites.
Okay.
Because some of the first Instagram pages I bought, scaled or built,
yeah,
were Instagram food accounts.
Okay.
Keto,
yeah,
specific diets. And then we would do the content, build it up, build it, and the likes up and all this stuff, and either sell posts or link it to recipe sites and sell the traffic, and then own the recipe site. So I used to know food content sites super well. And it's all, because food and recipes are just, I mean, you probably know it's better than me, but like, it's just that one part of the internet that's always gonna be
popular. Oh, yeah, I cook every day.
Yeah.
I cook every day.
And I look at recipe sites site every day. Every second day.
Yeah.
So let's dive into it. So it's a 10-year-old passive recipe site, 6 years.
So it's called passive recipe. That's interesting. Why they're calling it passive.
Yeah. What does that even mean?
Content, well, it sounds like, to me, it sounds like I don't need to, well, here they've got 6+ years of future content written and photographed. So they're making the income that they're making.
Insanely impressive.
But they've already put together this enormous portfolio of recipes.
That's insane. How far ahead is it? I film like 2 weeks ahead.
I know somebody who is in the creates recipes here in London, and they've got like their own whole studio for it. And whenever I stop by, it looks like a real production. Like it looks like there's a lot going on.
Wow.
So I don't know, 6+ years. Now, granted, that person is filming videos and all sorts of stuff related to it. So if this is just photography, that's interesting. But that definitely takes a big question mark off the case for me around, like, how are you going to be making
This can be bought, content. Sold, bought, sold, and bought and sold in the time that would run out of content.
You're still not running out of content.
Easily. 50 million page views over the last 12 months, which is kind of the volume you need for a recipe site.
Okay.
And 2.5 mil SDE. So the numbers are revenue, 3 mil. Income, net profit, 2.5 mil. The multiple they're looking for is 4.91. So they want $12.5 million for that. So let's get into some of the info here. Now, it's from Quiet Light. I like Quiet Light. They're pretty reliable when it comes to the information. They're pretty clean cut and clear about their listings. The owners have invested heavily in content, to say the least. There are over 2,500 published recipes on the site, with another 2,000 recipes that have been created and photographed in the queue.
I would pay a small amount of money to find out how they've done that.
Yeah.
Like, 25, maybe, I don't know, if there's a recipe maker watching this, they're like, oh, Gareth, it's super easy to make that, those sorts of things. But that strikes me as, like, recording or, producing 4,500 recipe pieces over 10 years.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I can't do the math in my head on how many that is per day.
I would love to know just the story of how they started it all, because it sounds fascinating. I'm sure they started it out on their own. But damn.
That's like, pretty good.
Yeah, insane. I'm trying to get some more info.
I think it's more, I'm just doing quick math in my head. It's more than one recipe per calendar day.
Yeah.
I think. Yes,
it is. The brand has a large social media presence with 474,000 followers on Pinterest, 479,000 on Facebook, 61,000 on Instagram. The business has a strong SEO profile. Nice. RS rating of 74, 92,000 backlinks, 8.7K website.
Email list too. 90,000 email list with a 44% open rate. Now, I don't know how believable open rates are now. I'd be curious about click rates. But that's almost big enough to, if you wanted to create your own kind of like spice brand or sort of small run product brand, you could do something there.
I have a friend with his own spice brand in Germany. Shout out to Jonas. What's up, bro? And He's just doing a B2B. So he sells the spices as gifts, basically. So this is the list, and we can't say the name because it's confidential, but we can glean what we can glean from it. So it's a young bloke by the look of the interview, or maybe that's the broker. Let's dive into some of the information. SBA loan eligible? No. Okay, this is the website. Nice, clean website. A shit ton of recipes, as expected. No shitty ads. Wait, I have my ad blocker on. Let's see if they don't have...
I highly doubt no shitty ads.
No shitty ads.
Okay.
Okay. I see they're advertising, check out the dinner cookbook. That's probably free.
I suspect that's paid. Anyways, it's good for them.
Me like hungry.
Now my stomach is rumbling.
How are they monetizing? Okay, so how are they?
I suspect they're going to be ads if you click into a recipe.
Yeah, there must be. I mean, maybe I've got some sort of ad blocker on the back.
Yeah, maybe it's just still going by accident. I think it might be, look at all these these gaps. So there are ads. There are ads.
But it's not something like some recipe sites are so bad with ads. Ooh, calories too. I'm going to be using this for recipes.
Okay, site. There you go.
We can't show you, Gael. Our editor will not be able to show you all this stuff. But one of the things that they said in their information was that they don't use short form video as much as they could. It's a growth opportunity. Which is the main way I'm seeing recipes is like this.
Yeah.
And then saving it and then looking for the recipe.
The content is definitely under-optimized.
Yeah. So none of their things get more than 1,000 views, which is a pity. On Facebook, nothing's really getting engaged with. Nothing's getting engaged with. So maybe that's a bit concerning, actually.
I'm curious how they're getting their traffic. I mean, overall, I don't mind this. It's like strong IP around, they've got recipes, they've got a cookbook. It's a big business, so like you're going to need some degree of financing to buy something for $12.5 million. I think there's a lot, frankly, if they've not done a good job on the videos historically, they've got all the pictures. You could probably edit together a whole bunch of stuff. Like, this business has been making good money for a long time.
Yeah. Less for the last 3 years.
But not by a ton. Oh, I guess, yeah, the SDE is done. Yeah. Well, also 2021, that's a COVID year. That's what everyone was going nuts. So if you normalize that, like, look, 2019 to, I don't know, say 2023, like, that's still pretty strong growth. I don't know. I don't hate this. I think there's probably something that you could do. Traffic looks like it's down a little bit. So, I don't know. It's a bit of a project. Five times.
That traffic being down, is there lack of innovation in...
I think so. I think they've been doing it for 10 years. They're probably a bit burnt out. Good for them. They built like a genuinely really strong business. Like, this is just a profitable website. This is like the old school...
I would die for a business like this.
Yeah, this is great.
Honestly, I love brands like this.
Yeah.
And someone can just come in. Someone young, honestly...
Yep.
Or with young-minded needs to come in and just
get... Crush this TikTok. Like.
Yeah, bring in this is what I would do. I would get the money together. I would bring in one or two cooking influencers. Like,
here's the answer on my question. Freelance writers, photography, we have a list of vendors. Get a studio to do it. So I guess you can hire... studios that specialize in photographing.
Yeah. I mean, at this point...
You want to start?
Just have a studio.
Yeah. George is going to start. George'sDelights.com.
I do love this niche. I'm trying to find this one girl who... I'm never going to find it, but...
You're always trying to find a girl.
Yeah. Like, I would pull the money together... probably family office or private equity group, I would find two or three different major cooking influencers on Instagram who are killing it in short form. There's this one girl, she's like, I think she's Puerto Rican American in California, kills it with short form.
Okay.
And she backed by a website, let's give her a piece. Let her vest for equity for 5%, 10%. And you're going to make crazy money. And then you've got the old school SEO organic and the new school short form content. I mean, this is that's the move here. I feel like.
Yeah. And I'm an e-commerce hammer, so everything looks like a nail to me. But I'm like, you got to start a brand here, start some sort of spice blend and incorporate that into a bunch of the recipes historically. Oh, what are they ranking for? Okay, they've got a like sweet and sour chicken. You make your own, like, I don't know, some sort of sweet and sour. I don't want to ship sauce. It's like shipping water. It's super expensive. But bang, bang, shrimp. Like, if you can figure out spice blends that could help make these.
Going back to the old ways of shipping spices. Another reference back to the old ways.
Oh, dear. There's a lot of stuff here that I'm like, you just figure out some products that you can make. And I don't know. You could start your own little mini food empire, assuming that however they're getting traffic right now doesn't get decimated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. They can forget about that multiple, but I'll pay 3.7, not 4.9.
Yeah, 4.9 is pretty steep, just especially at that like risk level.
Mm. Now?
Yeah. Online, it's tough for online businesses. Like, there's certainly if you're paying all of it up front, like, what if something does change on the algorithm?
Yeah.
It freaks me out a bit. But I don't know. I think I love these sorts of business. We were talking about this. Yeah. Like, this is just good for them. They built a strong business.
One of these guys. So this guy must be the seller.
I think so. Without the professional setup.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that.
Good on him. What a savage. Okay, cool. Well, that was a very interesting business. Love that. And Ryan, the broker, is going to make some very nice commissions. Talking of nice brokers with good commissions, e-commerce brokers. So we've got a new listing here. Label Outfitters. So interesting story before we get into it. This seller started this brand. This business was his dad's business.
Okay.
And then he bought it from his dad.
Okay.
About 20 years ago. This business is 14 years old, 6 months, and the business saw a slow but inevitable decline over 14 years. Then he went to YouTube, typed in how to, you know, exit a business, saw this face about how to improve your business, applied some changes, especially email marketing, and the last 6 months have been sold. So,
awesome.
So this is recently listed. Actually, I don't think we've listed it just yet publicly. Obviously, the website needs updating.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever traffic he is getting can be instantly improved and optimized. Product photos, of course, need to be fixed. He has like a 60% repeat customer rate because it's B2B clients.
Okay.
But he's also brought in new clients over the last 6 months. So he's proven over the last six months of this year, that this business can be turned around, essentially.
Yeah.
That's why we've put it at a lower multiple at about 3x. But of course, he's looking to retire. This is an old school business. There's a lot of repeat customers. Fixing the website, of course, is their product line could be expanded. It's an old school business, but for someone who is making the move from the corporate world to the online world, there's not much.
It's a good starter business.
Yeah, there's not much to figure out here. Website needs to be updated. Marketing needs to be updated. He's never actually done marketing before the last 6 months.
Right.
So he has a base of 60% repeat orders from customers. So there's very little that you can do to make it worse.
Yeah. You could also probably move. It looks like he's got his own warehouse. So you could move that from owned warehouse into a 3PL if you wanted to kind of reduce the work, personal work burden a little bit. 7 primary suppliers. That's pretty good. Like that's not too bad. AOV is of $95. So that's probably a level that you could pay a bit in ads to acquire new customers, which it sounds like he's now doing. They're not going to have a big chargeback risk because it's a B2B type thing. You're doing some account management there. I don't hate it. I think you've got to figure out like what differentiates, like why is someone choosing to purchase their labels and stuff from from this business rather than, you know, Staples or Amazon or wherever else they could get this.
I think a lot of these, the clients are like a coffee shop that wants a cup.
They just need like a small thing, yeah.
Yeah. So
I wonder how much of this is going to be like relationship management. You're likely a little bit buying a job.
Yeah. But also something I thought about when I'm looking at this business, I would put in the same category as that Guernsey flower shop business.
Oh, yeah.
I looked about in the last episode.
If you're assuming that customers are sticking around, have been sticking around for a while, they're continuing to stick around a little bit. Those are nice, tight AOVs for a B2B business. You're right. It's probably a lot of local people, kind of local businesses ordering, and it's not terrible. You're looking to kind of buy something for a little bit over 3x multiple on profit. Yeah. Like you could probably find someone to finance it. You're buying a bit of a job, but if you can fix up the website, improve conversion rates a little bit,
those 16 hours can be brought down to 6.
Yeah, probably.
And now you're making $200K a year. For 6 hours a week.
Yeah. People get it out to a 3PL.
People go to university for 12 years to get a job that makes that much money.
Yeah.
And they work like a dog every day.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I don't think the products are super differentiated, but if you've clearly got a bit of a niche. I wonder if it's like selling mostly to local businesses. Yeah. I wonder if there's a bit of a bent there. Yeah, I'd be interested if I'm looking at this sort of stuff, I'd be interested in learning more. The question just becomes like, it's probably easier if you live local to this, cause you're going to have to do some warehouse transitioning or work in the warehouse
Atlanta, Georgia.
So if you're in Atlanta, Georgia, this is worth taking a look at. If you're not around there, it might be a little bit difficult. Mm. Like is the juice worth the squeeze kind of question too.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to have to remotely reposition this entire business, that's a little bit difficult. The upside, the business is not so big that the upside is going to be enormous. There's not a lot of wiggle room, so you're probably going to have to be boots on the ground in Atlanta. So if you want to move to Atlanta, or if you already live there, move there at least temporarily, that's probably what it'll take.
Cool. All right. One more review, or do you want to leave this one for the next?
I think let's leave this for the next one. Cool. I think that's pretty good for today.
Alrighty. Well, again, big thanks to Bupos for sponsoring this episode. We'll see you in the next one.